Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Cima da Conigliano was a prolific painter in the Venetian Renaissance, known for his bright colors and spatial harmony in his landscapes. While Cima is often compared to his contemporaries, such as Giovanni Bellini, his landscape paintings are particularly poetic, as he anchors his religious subjects in real places. In this lecture, held on October 21, 2019, as part of the Works in Progress series, Sarah Hyde investigates Cima's landscapes within the context of recent scholarship on Venetian landscape painting. Hyde specifically addresses the artist's depiction of trees as a way to unpack his vision of nature.
Today, I'm going to share my research on Venetian Renaissance painter Cima da Conigliano. This talk will focus on his landscape paintings and his ability to ground sacred subjects in real, verdant places. The examples I will show will reveal his use of arboreal imagery to navigate between two worlds, the devotional and the pastoral. I'm lucky that two books on Venetian landscape painting have been published just this year, both titled Green Worlds, and I am able to build off of the recent work by these scholars, especially since Cima was not discussed in these volumes. I am extremely indebted to one of those authors and editors, Dr. April Ottinger, who this summer was the Paul Mellon Visiting Senior Fellow here at the gallery. She helped me narrow my focus in on Cima's trees. Giovanni Battista Cima, known as Cima da Conigliano, was born in Conigliano in 1459 on the mainland of the Terra Firma. He began his artistic career in the late 15th century, during an extremely complicated time of the Venetian Republic's political history. By the start of the War of the League of the Cambrai in 1508, the Republic of Venice had lost nearly all of its mainland territory that it had acquired during the previous century, which is in green on the map. While Cima lived and worked in Venice, he never fully shed his ties to his hometown of Conigliano and connection to the Terra Firma. This map shows the distance between Venice and Conigliano, which is circled in red. I embarked on such a journey this summer and traveled to Conigliano from Venice. I took this photograph of Cima's house, which is still preserved today as a little museum. Cima had maintained ownership of several properties in Conigliano, like this one, and he seems to have traveled frequently between Venice and there throughout his life. He was finally buried there in 1517, returning to the mainland in perpetuity after a successful and prolific career in Venice as an artist. Cima established a unique style of Venetian Renaissance painting that he mastered throughout his career. He used the landscape and natural elements to frame his sacred subjects within real topographical locations. While scholars agree that Cima's contemporaries, such as Giovanni Bellini, Giorgione, and Titian, mastered the genre of the pastoral Venetian landscape, Cima distinctively used the poetic nature of the landscape to heighten the devotional message of his paintings. These paintings, both from the Samuel H. Kress collection at the gallery and on view upstairs, show Cima's similarities to Bellini. He is often compared to Bellini, and in my opinion, overshadowed by him. And it doesn't help that Giorgio Vasari falsely identified Cima as Bellini's pupil in his notorious Lives of the Artists. Cima certainly appreciated Bellini's works and was inspired by him, but I will show how Cima drew from popular literature that permeated throughout the High Renaissance to illustrate his devotional subjects in a uniquely pastoral way. He did this particularly with arboreal imagery. As Cima exploited the natural elements of the landscape, he also placed his divine figures into recognizable places, as he tended to include hilltop castellos or castles, reminiscent of his hometown in Conigliano and the mountainous topography of the Veneto. In comparing his landscapes with Bellini, Peter Humphrey, who wrote the last monograph on Cima in 1983, characterizes Cima's works as more lush, fertile, and wild. While Cima lived and worked in the stony metropolis of Venice, his paintings rivaled the fresh greenery of his countryside roots. In the late 15th century Venice, artists were starting to increasingly exploit the use of landscape in their works. But Cima executes the natural world with a particular authority. Unlike other leading Venetian landscape artists, such as Bellini and Titian, who incorporated the landscape into poetic pictures of pleasure, like this well-known painting, The Feast of the Gods, Cima's versions of these regional and lush landscapes were shaped into large-scale altarpieces, or pictures for devotional worship. Cima's use of landscape aided the spiritual function of his paintings. This painting is also on view upstairs. Art historical scholarship has established that Venetian artists ruled the pastoral landscape genre in the early 16th century, despite Venice being a city on the water. These artists were inspired by poetry such as Virgil, Homer, Petrarch, and Boccaccio. During the Renaissance, the humanist interest in such literature inspired generations of poets to borrow motifs which became permanent components of this genre: trees, spring, grass, woodlands, and plant life, elements that were not often found across the lagoon in Venice. Especially popular in poetry was a particular vignette of the shepherd, which is a transcendent figure found in all time periods and literature. The shepherd is included in the story of the Nativity and the eclogues of Virgil. As will be seen in a few minutes, Cima cleverly adopted the pastoral motif of the shepherd and placed him, along with other major Christian figures, within the Veneto countryside. Consider another literary source popular around the turn of the 16th century in Venice, Francesco Colonna's Hypnerotomachia Polyphili, published by Aldus Manutius. This was written in an unusual Latinate Italian, combining Latin, Italian, and Greek language arranged on the page in an often peculiar arrangement that you see here. The character of Polyphilio falls into a dream and travels through different realms to pursue his love, Polia. Cima's paintings can be interpreted as illustrations of many of Polyphilio's encounters in nature. The Hypnerotomachia Polyphili allows the protagonist to transcend worlds, from the earth to the landscape. And Polyphilio constantly engages in his natural surroundings in this book. When he comes across his love, Polia, he describes the environment in which he finds himself in detail, which I will quote right now in front of this Cima painting. "The serene sky, the healthy and gentle air, the delicious country, the ornate greenery, the pleasant and temperate hills ornamented with dark woods, the clement weather and pure breezes, and the charming and comfortable place, well watered by streams flowing through the wooded valleys beside the rounded hills, running gently to the left and to the right and falling into the sea, the fertile meadows rich with turf, filled with many trees and the concerts of little birds," end quote. Cima borrows the poetic pastoral paradise for his devotional paintings, wherein he combines scripture, poem, and nature to invite the viewer to join the sacred scene. In many of Cima's natural worlds, he includes prominent arboreal imagery toward the center of the composition, adjacent to the sacred figures. It is not surprising that he focused on trees, as his fondness toward the mainland terra firma and the Venetian demand for timber would make the artist particularly aware of their significance. What is surprising is the manner in which Cima incorporated his trees into these landscapes. Unlike the groups of trees just seen in Feast of the Gods, Cima tended to place solitary trees in his landscapes. He was not the first to incorporate arboreal imagery into religious paintings. The motif has long been a Christian symbol and used in religious imagery. Starting with the fall of man eating the forbidden fruit of the tree of knowledge, to the crucifixion of Christ on the cross, the tree was a significant symbol for human salvation throughout the Bible and theological teachings. Cima, however, was able to use arboreal imagery in a uniquely Venetian manner, marrying the popular pastoral notions of landscape illustrated in the Hypnerotomachia Polyphili with these established doctrinal ideals. The first painting I will analyze, The Baptism of Christ, was commissioned for the Church of San Giovanni in Borgora in Venice in 1492 and installed by 1495, where it still resides today. It was painted toward the beginning of Cima's career, but it seems to have sparked his success in the genre, as many commissions would follow, both from Venice and the mainland. Humphrey identifies this painting as one of Cima's finest works and suggests that it is the first large-scale representation of the painting in Venetian subjects. I agree with this argument when you see the painting in person. I visited the painting twice, and this photograph I took does not do justice to the effect it has when you visit it in person. Each time, it is an overwhelming focus that you are drawn to as soon as you enter this small church in the Castello neighborhood of Venice. The painting is located over the altar and is still installed within its original frame. It is impossible not to notice the dazzling blue sky as it takes up the entire top half of its composition. The painting depicts the biblical story in a similar manner to other portrayals of the subject. Christ, center, stands at the mouth of the Jordan River with three angels to the left of him, and St. John in the action of baptism, as the dove and the Holy Spirit is positioned directly above them. In the foreground, the angels and St. John stand on grassy riverbanks, sandwiching Christ in the water. Humphrey recognizes the Dolomite Mountains and its lowlands in the background, as a winding path leads to a hilltop town reminiscent of Conegliano. To the left of Christ stands a large, thin, deciduous tree with jagged, bare branches standing out dramatically against the sky. The tree mimics how Christ arcs his body towards St. John. And behind St. John, the fuller tree equally mimics how St. John bends his body towards Christ. St. John and Christ connect the trees in the composition, with the former's long, thin arm serving as a bridge between the two. Less noticeable is the tree stump by St. John's feet. This is the only arboreal object alluded to in the biblical story of the baptism. In Matthew chapter 3, verse 10, when St. John declares, quote, "For now the axe is laid to the root of the trees. Every tree, therefore, that doth not yield good fruit shall be cut down and cast into the fire." End quote. This tree stump is choppily severed, with one leafy branch on the left mirrored by a bare branch on the right. The commission of the painting by the Church of San Giovanni in Bergora was certainly a tribute to St. John, as it was said to house one of the saint's fingers as a holy reliquary. But Cima uses the dead and blooming trees for a deeper meaning. The interplay between dead and living trees and branches in religious imagery often refers to sin. The dry tree, or half barren and half blooming, alludes to the tree of knowledge that died after Adam and Eve ate the forbidden fruit. In this fresco in the Sistine Chapel ceiling, Michelangelo uses the dead stump to mimic Eve's outstretched arm in the actual act of her sin, taking the fruit. Likewise, for Cima's baptism, as the act of the baptism washes away sin, Cima skillfully represents this idea in his trees, which are natural characters of the painting, as well as the sacred figures. Cima's baptism has strong visual connections to Piero della Francesca's version of the story painted decades earlier. While it is not known if Cima saw this composition in a circulating print, the paintings are so similar they beg a comparison, and I have not found any scholars who have linked Cima's version to Piero's. Most strikingly, there is a prominent tree to the left of Christ, seemingly borrowed by Cima for his version. Piero's tree, however, is an enormous blooming walnut tree that canopies Christ and the Holy Dove beneath its leaves. Cima's baptism possesses the same sacred themes, but it provides the viewer with something else, an air of pastoral paradise. In Cima's painting, the landscape dwarfs the religious figures. It's difficult to see, but the leafy branch on the tree stump leads the eye to two ducks enjoying the water. A shepherd, over the shoulder of the blonde angel, tends to his flock in the pasture. The scene evokes the pastoral eclogues of Homer and Virgil and proves Cima as a true landscape connoisseur and poet. It also echoes the opening passage of Jacopo Sannazzaro's popular Arcadia, which was circulating in Venice by 1498, and in it declares the author's preference for natural trees and shaggy mountains, as opposed to pruned trees and ornamented gardens. The trees in Cima's painting are rough and natural, while Piero's are polished. Like Piero, Cima's trees also serve as important characters in his religious painting, but they embody poetic characteristics as well. In some of Cima's landscape paintings, pastoral motifs are found directly beneath these sacred trees. Consider Adoration of the Shepherds, an altarpiece still in situ, commissioned in 1504 for an altar in the Santa Maria de Carmini in Venice. It not only combines pastoral and religious figures, but includes a shepherd leaning against a tree in the background of the work playing a flute, which I will show in a second. This altarpiece depicts the aftermath of the Nativity, and the divine figures only take up a third of the entire composition. They stand beneath a rocky outcropping that is blanketed by woodlands. A curved tree hangs over the edge, and its branches peek over the side as if to get a better look at the newborn Christ. Behind the gathering is a winding path to a hilltop town, similar to the background of Cima's baptism. The Dolomite Mountains resurface here. As in the baptism, Cima places a tree in the middle ground, which stands out drastically against the orange sky. The enormous sky is in the transition stages of daybreak, tinged with orange and yellow behind the mountains and turns gray, then finally blue. The tree, branching out against the orange background, is blooming with leaves on every branch as if to celebrate the birth of life with Christ. This detail I took shows that shepherd leaning against the tree, playing an instrument in front of his flock. This vignette is quoted almost directly from one of Polyphilo's ventures in Hypnerotomachia Polyphili, where he comes across a musician in a landscape. Quote, "This man was playing two rustic flutes with his cheeks bulging as he leaned against a knotty trunk of wood," end quote. This shepherd and his tree, playing into the popularity of the Venetian pastoral genre, also serves a divine message in the altarpiece painting, Christ as a tree. The shepherd is positioned adjacent to St. Helena's wooden cross. Foreshadowing Christ's death in the background of a painting about his birth, we think of the biblical passage in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 24, quote, "He himself bore our sins on his body on the tree," end quote. The viewer would have made the connection between Christ and the cross, and Cima's Veneto landscape situates the spiritual message within the context of pastoral vision. Speaking of St. Helena, in Cima's small-scale devotional painting of the saint, which is on view upstairs, he remained faithful in his depiction to the landscape. We know the least about this work, which is probably why it is the painting that first sparked my fascination with the artist. According to the Golden Legend, a 13th century text on the lives of the saints, the cross on which Christ was crucified had been lost until St. Helena recovered it. It is said that the precious wood of the cross was hidden underground for over 200 years until it was rediscovered by Helena, mother of the Emperor Constantine. The story goes that Constantine sent his mother on a mission to Jerusalem to uncover the cross, and she found it beneath a temple dedicated to Venus. She found multiple crosses at the site, so she tested them by holding them over a dead man. When the third cross was held over the dead man, it brought him back to life, which indicated that it was the true cross. In this triumphal painting, however, Cima does not depict Jerusalem behind the saint. These are the hills and the small towns of Conegliano. When I traveled to Conegliano to see the landscape for myself, I could recognize the Veneto views in Cima's work. This view is from the top of the Castello, that is essentially Cima's signature atop a hill seen in so many of his paintings. You can see the topographical similarities between these views and Cima's work, especially in the blue mountains and green hills. But I have to talk specifically about the tree in this painting. The composition is dominated by three large objects: St. Helena herself, who takes up a large part of the picture, the true cross, and the tree behind her on the right. This tree is like the one that Cima used in the baptism. It is deciduous and is comprised of bare and living branches. As in the previously discussed Cima paintings, the prominent tree displays its branches against a clear sky. The tree looks particularly out of place in the green foreground. Since I'm not a botanist, I got some help from the gallery's horticulture department. They went to examine the painting up close and pointed out to me that the tree looks impossibly large. they conclude that the type of tree is unidentifiable, but Cima might have been trying to paint a type of oak due to the large lobes on the leaves. Again, it bends in the same direction as the saint's head, mirroring her body. The tree's connection to the true cross is unmistakable here, and Cima exploits the natural world to convey the devotional message. Scholars argue that this dead tree is springing to life and refers to the rebirth and redemption associated with the legend of the true cross. The massive wooden cross, which would be impossible for the saint to physically hold up, would also remind the viewer of the importance of timber for the Venetian Republic. Oak was a particularly useful type of wood for construction, and it was used to build ships, making it a significant resource for the Republic's naval power. This small painting also evokes the popular poetry of Virgil, where musicians gather in sunny and grassy spots and where shepherds sit beneath the shade of trees spreading their branches. This painting borrows the pastoral sense of paradise away from civilization, as St. Helena is wrapped in nature, allowing the viewer to imagine their own utopia. The viewer, who in this case would be gifted with an intimate look at the painting, could visualize the triumphal feeling of St. Helena in the green landscape, surrounded by the pleasant countryside of the terra firma. There are so many other paintings that I could have shown you today by Cima, and I encourage you to visit the works here, as well as those by Bellini, Giorgione, and Titian upstairs. Cima da Conegliano was a prolific artist and produced more surviving works than any of his contemporaries. I hope that when you look at Cima's works here, or if you're lucky enough to travel to Italy, that you notice his attention to detail and view him as a master of Venetian Renaissance painting. But most importantly, I hope that you recognize him as a landscape poet. Thank you.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.